This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be sexual misconduct at work. I am joined by barrister David Welch from Alexander Chambers in London. David is an experienced employment law barrister with over 25 years of practice handling complex and lengthy legal work, both in courts and in tribunals, representing the public and the private sectors. He has sat on the Employment Tribunal in London Central and was appointed to the Employment Appeal Tribunal. David also sat as a magistrate judge for 10 years. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
Thank you.
Good to have you on the other side of my screen today whilst we record remotely during our COVID crisis, as it were. So sexual misconduct at work, David. Let's first talk to our listeners and explain. What do we mean by sexual misconduct at work? What can be examples of sexual misconduct at work?
I think the first thing to say is that any definition of sexual misconduct at work is quite wide-ranging. For example, it can include things like sexually offensive comments about somebody's dress or their appearance.
And you comments, you say, so just commenting on that.
It could be something like saying somebody looks sexy at one end of things, or perhaps more extreme at the other end. So some other examples of sexual misconduct at work might be displaying or distributing sexually explicit material. So obviously at this stage, the internet and computers.
Yes, you have people coming and waving their phones and saying, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And, you know, I mean, I have to say, I've seen that happen, and it not everybody finds explicit material funny. But no. Some people do. So I guess if somebody's behaving in that way continuously and you're saying, look, this is really distasteful, it's not for me, and they keep doing it, then could is that potentially an action of sexual misconduct at work?
I think the answer is yes to that. I mean, I think, obviously, of course, sometimes people say display material and do it inadvertently. I can give you one example of a nurse who, when received a video sent to her phone, and it was concerning what appeared to be the abuse of a child.
Oh, my God.
She did, unfortunately, was then pass it on to others.
Oh, my God.
And she was the one who was then taken to task by her employer, indeed by a regulatory body.
Goodness so gracious.
One's got to be always careful because you can be someone who just receives something, but if you then do something with it, you may also be accused of sexual misconduct.
Yes, I mean, that's quite an important point. But what we're saying is, you know, if you receive something and it's something that's just harmful material, you know, it shouldn't even exist, stuff like that, and you don't go and report it, then you're really a party to that because you've received it, even though you weren't the sender. I guess it's, you know, that's quite a key point, really, because you don't really think of things like that, do you? So one of the examples we're saying is, you know, people flashing inappropriate videos or images on their phones or on their computers or laptops or on their gadgets. What other examples are there that we may not necessarily automatically think, oh, that's part of, you know, sexual misconduct at work?
Well, I think it can, or potentially can, include engaging some sort of sexual activity at work, even if it's consensual. So I
That's
emphasize
interesting.
That latter point because if you engage in that sort of conduct, then you lay yourself potentially open to be criticized for it. Now, that may be, again, it may be sometimes cultural. People sometimes, you know, perhaps pre-COVID, if you're French, I meet you, you kiss me on both cheeks. But clearly for some cultures, that's totally unacceptable. So one's always got to be aware of the context, who you're working with, who you're dealing with.
Yes.
In terms of being wary about one's own behaviour. And of course, the same applies to perhaps viewing somebody else's behaviour as inappropriate or not. Often depends from where you come from, not necessarily your ethnicity, but your beliefs in terms of what's acceptable. But
and I guess the other... Sorry, please, go ahead.
No, I was just going to give some more examples.
Yes.
Which I've taken from, funny enough, from a university employer, from their policies regarding these sort of matters. So they include things like making assumptions or harassment concerning homophobic and transphobic behaviour, refusal to acknowledge a person's gender identity.
Or, and that would come under sexual misconduct at work?
In that particular employer, it's a well-known university. I'm not going to name them.
Yes.
It's a well-known university. And of course, for that employer, of course, they're also concerned about what happens to their students, because they're clearly, as all employers, they've got a duty of care. But in that case, they've got a duty of care towards their consumers as well. So what also one's got to be concerned about is perhaps the more mundane thing one might think, touching someone inappropriately without consent, following someone. You may remember
following someone.
When the Protection from Harassment Act came in, that was known as the Stalking Act, and typically it was believed to be that only happened strangers following me down the street or something like
Again,
that.
Again, I wouldn't necessarily think that. I wouldn't automatically say that following somebody equates to sexual misconduct at work, but we're saying it could come under that banner.
One's got to look at the motive and explanation, obviously, from that person who's been followed and that person who's been accused of following.
Because you've kind of had it, is it stalking, is it sexual misconduct? Yeah. I mean, it comes, you know, you start thinking of those rooms. So, I mean, you've got really from the lower end of the spectrum saying, look, you know, showing inappropriate material on in any shape or form, to stalking and following somebody or touching somebody inappropriately, where, you know, sort of a pat on the back or a little rub on the shoulder or something, where you wouldn't necessarily, going back, I don't know, quite a few years, all of this was probably okay, even though our gadgets didn't exist for people to sit there and show material in that way. But, you know, and then you've got the extreme end of the spectrum, I'd say, which would be literally to sexually try and assault somebody. To you know, that's probably the most extreme, I'd say.
I think it's probably worth saying, of course, depending on the alleged seriousness of any conduct, of course, it's not just for an employer perhaps to deal with matters. It may then be appropriate to refer matters to the police.
Right.
Clearly, if there's a deemed sexual assault. But again, nowadays, it's more likely that individuals report matters, and more likely, particularly if they're serious matters, for the involvement of the police, whether or not that finally results in any charges being brought. I think that's another perhaps more contentious question, how little of these allegations ever end up in the court process. I mean, it's well known, obviously, on the very serious end of things, how little few cases of alleged rape actually get to court and how few of them then result in a
because
conviction.
They're underreported, really, David. I mean, I think the statistics show that they're underreported, and that's what we were going to talk about next. What should I do if I believe I'm a victim of sexual misconduct in the workplace? And I mean, clearly, obviously, the first thing to do is say to your employer, this is happening. I mean, there comes a very crucial point there. What about if it is the employer? So if it's the top of your food chain that's creating this, you know, these situations, these wrong situations, where do you go then? You could be in fear of losing your job. You might not have a big enough team. Should you go to the police? Because sexual misconduct is a criminal offence, we're saying, right?
Well, I think the answer is it can be. If it gets into the stage of being an assault, then potentially it would be a criminal offence.
Yes.
But let's say, any inappropriate touching could and can be alleged to be an assault. So I can just touch you like that on the hand, and that potentially, I'm not saying therefore those sorts of allegations end up in the criminal courts. Clearly they don't, but potentially assault is that wide-reaching in terms of...
So, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say if you're in a situation where you're top of your food chain at work, as it were, are the alleged offenders, then you need to go outside of the organisation to try and report this. I mean, obviously, if you're fearful of reporting it to your boss, I think it's fair to say if it's going to be inappropriate for you to be in that workplace once you've reported it, no matter where you report it to, then it's got to be right that you do report it to stop the behaviour, if it's continuing behaviour.
Well, it may sound strange, but the first bit of advice I would always give to an individual who, as far as they're concerned, not questioning their perception, but as far as they're concerned, has been the victim of some kind of sexual misconduct, is to write it down.
Right.
As soon as possible, keep it safe. Perhaps if you've got a trusted friend or colleague, to send it to them, only if they're a trusted colleague, so that you've got a contemporaneous, you've got a current record of what you believe has happened. Because we all know that whenever one reports these sort of things, often they can take a good deal of time to be investigated. So the more detail one's written down at the time, the more likely it's to be believed subsequently. So that's one thing. Write it down. Confirm the date, the time, if you can recall when it happened, and keep that information safe. Now, clearly, a lot of employers have policies regarding what you should do under the circumstances. Some of them are known by the title of dignity at work policies, or some may just be very more straightforward sexual harassment policies. But often, and in particular, but not exclusively in public sector employers, they have somebody you can go to as to report stuff informally in the first instance.
Yes, so and confidentially as well. I think that's indeed really important to say,
sometimes,
isn't it?
Certainly in terms of your question, what happens if I do this? Am I going to put my job at risk? So a number of organisations have policies that allow you to go and speak to someone in a confidential fashion and then decide what you want to do about it.
Yes.
It's a funny sort of thing, really, because if you are posed the question, well, if I'm suffering as a result of this unwanted conduct, what do I want to happen? And I always say to an individual, you may not know the answer to that initially, but you need to think about that.
Yes.
Because, whether it's positive or negative in terms of stopping the information, stopping the conduct, you need to have a an idea of what you'd like to happen. Now, sometimes people say, look, I've been on the receipt of unwanted conduct. He should be sacked.
Yes.
And often the answer is, well, the employer is not going to agree with you about that. Why? Because they're not going to allow an employee to dictate what should happen. Eventually.
Yes, but I think it's fair to say that most employers in the day and age that we live in do take appropriate actions. I don't think it's common for there to be inappropriate actions or not enough being done about it. You know, I think in these circumstances, most employers will look to take appropriate actions. Certainly corporate employers take this sort of thing incredibly seriously. And then it brings us to the other side. You know, what should I do if I'm accused of sexual misconduct? You know, all of a sudden it could be a very innocent incident. It could be a one-off, an innocent incident that's happened, or it could be something that you've been doing repeatedly, but you're not actually thinking clearly and wisely as to that is a problem, and you're just going along with some sort of a laugh and a joke, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's been, you think it's acceptable, you feel it's being accepted and even reciprocated to a degree. What do you do if you're accused?
Perhaps not surprisingly, I say the initial stage should be the same. If you're accused, also yourself, as soon as you can, write down for yourself what you think did or didn't happen.
Detailed account, yes, just so that you have that in record, because a lot can happen very quickly in these situations, David, I think, and, you know, then you don't want to lose track of what actually happened, what was said, when, how, who.
It's clearly not unusual for employers, when an allegation is made, to suspend somebody from work. And often with that suspension, that means you haven't got access. Let's say the example is about sending messages to and from someone, perhaps on your computer, perhaps on a text, whatever. But often employers will close down the ability to retrieve that information from that person accused. It's arguable whether that's fair or not. But that's what happens typically. So again, if you have been accused of something, if you're able to retrieve any information, perhaps to counter the allegations, to do that immediately, because you may be stopped from doing that. It doesn't mean to say you couldn't obtain such information subsequently as a result of an investigation.
Or request your employer access it for you. You know, you can say, look, on this day, around about this day, it was the morning of or the afternoon of, or, you know, this is where I've got this or that information. Can you please retrieve that for me, or retrieve it and put it in a safe place? I mean, you know, I think the thing is, if you're accused of sexual misconduct, I think that's you know, great sort of sound advice. Write everything down so that you know what your story is and how your story is. And you know, I think one of the things that I would say, and of course this is varied for all sorts of different scenarios and situations, is don't bury your head in the sand, or try not to bury your head in the sand. Because if you think, you know what, that was actually a joke that went too far, or I really was being silly there, I shouldn't have really done that. I think there's a lot to say for someone who acknowledges that they've done something wrong and just comes forward and say, look, hands up, I've been a bit of an idiot, or I've done something inappropriate, or I've done something wrong. There it is. You know, apologies for that. And obviously don't repeat the action. But I think there's a lot to say for that, because, you know, if you're being accused, I should imagine that you could start feeling a little bit fearful. What's going to happen to your job, your reputation in your job? And hopefully it's a situation that hasn't gone too far, you know. I mean, we're obviously talking about sexual misconduct on the highest scale of rape or something like that. Goodness.
Can I say, perhaps add to that advice to an employee accused. Clearly, they need to have a look at any company procedure concerning such matters. There may be a separate procedure, as we said, as I said earlier on, concerning dignity at work. But if nothing else, obtain the disciplinary procedure. Nowadays, often those things are accessible even outside of work, but the employer should provide that in any way. Obviously, if you're a member of a trade union, you should contact them. And depending, I think, on the alleged seriousness of the allegations, it may be sensible at this stage to contact a lawyer, certainly if that matter may be then reported to the police. And yes. Then we've got that sort of dilemma, really, about employees. How should I cooperate with this investigation, or should I do the often advice from solicitors, which is no comment?
I was just going to say those two magical words.
The problem with that, with an employer, is that you are expected to cooperate with your employer reasonably concerning investigations. And so in my advice would be that's not appropriate. It may be appropriate.
The no comment is not appropriate, David. That's what we're saying here. Yeah.
I don't think it really helps. Now, of course, all this advice must be dependent on the individual circumstances.
Of course.
But I think the other thing is that I would always advise employees, if you haven't been already, you're likely to be suspended. That's not necessarily a belief that you have done something wrong or not done something. It's as a protection, sometimes for yourself and sometimes, or more particularly, normally for potentially other employees. But the difficulty sometimes for professional employees, and by those I mean those professions that are regulated, are typically doctors, nurses, teachers, social workers. A whole gamut of professional workers are also responsible to their professional body. And all those professional bodies will always say you should cooperate. And if you don't, you're actually going to get into trouble with the professional body.
Well, that's very interesting because, you know, I guess, and I'm going to say this, you know, from the films and the TV that we watch, when you see somebody saying, or you read someone saying, no comment, I don't know what it is, but automatically a part of you can think you're guilty. That's why you're not speaking. You've got something to hide. But, you know, on both sides of that, you can say, well, somebody may not want to say the wrong thing because it may be, you know, it may be used against them, and they just want to be clear about what they should and shouldn't be talking about, you know, so that something that's irrelevant but can be picked up and used against them isn't used against them. But then you can say, well, just keep it simple, and these things are never simple, I can completely appreciate that, particularly this subject matter, and just say it as it is. But what you just mentioned there is very interesting. If you are belonging to a professional with your body, that you could be breaking their rules by not cooperating, regardless of your right to sit there and regardless of the films that we've watched that have the individual sitting there and saying no comment. So I can easily see both sides of that sort of argument. But we've got time for one more question. And I know we've got lots more questions that we did want to cover, and I do want to cover that. I think part two is going to be an interesting one, particularly when we talk about what happens to those professionals that work in close proximity with individuals, you know, like doctors and nurses and all sorts. But the last question I'd like to ask and discuss, David, if I may, is what is the strangest case of alleged sexual misconduct that you have been involved in? And obviously throughout your career as a barrister, without breaching any confidentiality, but let's talk about something, you know, that you can give us a little bit of light on.
I once represented a doctor, and that doctor was accused of prescribing Viagra to a male friend on a Friday night. I emphasise each of those words because each of those words are important.
Right.
She wrote a private prescription on a prescription notepad. You know, it's the standard thing you get
yes.
from both hospitals and from GPs, but this prescription notepad emanated from a women and children's hospital.
Right. Yeah,
you might think that rather strange, Viagra coming from a woman and children's hospital. Not known, I'm not a doctor, but I've not known it to be advised to take Viagra if you're a woman. Perhaps not surprisingly, she was reported to the General Medical Council by the pharmacist manager. She actually got the prescription, but the pharmacist manager came in the following day and said, "What the proverbial is this?" and that person then decided to report the doctor to the GMC. And you won't be surprised to know that doctor was struck off by the GMC.
For writing a private prescription of Viagra to a friend.
I think one should add, and as ever in these cases, it's more complicated than that. But the individual, I'm afraid, perhaps wasn't too careful with her explanation of why this happened.
Right. And was the friend a male friend, or was the male friend a female friend?
It was a male friend.
Right.
So female doctor, male
doctor friend. Wrote a prescription on a women's and children's hospital prescription pad, Viagra, to a male friend. They were okay with it, but the manager picked it up and thought, this is odd, and reported it, and the General Medical Council decided they were going to.
Because if you're writing a you shouldn't have a prescription pad belonging to a hospital that you've never worked for starters.
Right, I see.
So that's a degree of dishonesty or deceit. Or
yes.
Perhaps fraud even.
Yes,
and you see how it escalates. So that's probably the strangest one I've had. And perhaps I could just add one more about that, because often people say, well, look, she or he wanted me to behave in a particular way. I'm not now dealing with this case, I'm dealing with another case where there's alleged sexual misconduct off-site, not at the workplace,
right,
between two adults. And in that particular case, male and female, he had more senior status. Both parties reported that it was consensual, their activity, but he lost his job. He was forced to resign, and she wasn't.
Now, because?
It was deemed because of his seniority. He was only slightly senior, but he was senior to her. He should have known better, and he should have complied with the policies of the organisation.
So the policies of the organisation clearly said that two people that work for this company cannot engage in a relationship or in any
engage, I suppose, on a work-related activity.
Right.
They were both at a conference. It was during that period, which also is important to note that doesn't matter nowadays where the alleged conduct has taken place, because the employer will often take a view that you have brought the organisation into disrepute by your activities off-site.
Right, that is an interesting point, isn't it?
So you can't sort of think at work, it's more.
And that was consensual, David. That's really, really, you know, interesting, isn't it? Because you would think, well, hold on a moment. Nobody's saying that they had sexual misconduct against them. No. They're not making a complaint. Obviously, somebody else said, these two went off. And the employer took the view that that was sexual misconduct. That's really interesting, isn't it? Because I wouldn't naturally think or automatically think if two people consent, the parties themselves are in no dispute or complaint over what's happened, that the employer then can come up above that and say, well, no, you can't do that.
Well, what the employer was saying was, look, you have a choice. You can walk away by resignation, or we may end up dismissing you. And then you will be also reported to the GMC. So a double bind. So the individual took the view it would be better to walk away.
Well, I have to say, what an interesting podcast, David. Thank you ever so much. I have to say, I wouldn't have expected us to have the conversations with some of the answers and details that we did. But thank you ever so much for your time today. I really appreciate that.
You're most welcome.
And I will be looking forward to our part two, because there are far too many questions that we haven't covered.
Okay.
And what I will say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.